Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. And I know you're saying, what's going on? An Arscast on a Tuesday? What's happening? Well, look, it's an interlull. There's not much happening. So I thought it might be a good idea to do one of those episodes where we talk to an Arsenal fan who is doing something interesting on the internet. And that is very true of today's guest. He's obviously passionate about football, but he's also passionate about food. Football and food is an excellent combination, if you ask me. So that's what this particular episode is about. We're talking to somebody who has got millions, literally millions of followers on Instagram who are looking at his recipes and very obviously liking what they see, because his account has grown from basically nothing to millions of followers in about 12 or 18 months' time. So let's try and find out how that happened. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the show Alfie Steiner, who you might also know as Alfie Cooks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Andrew.
It's my pleasure. You, before we get into what you're doing right now, you, like many people, they come and they go, have a bit of an Arsenal podcast. Tell me a bit about your Arsenal background and how you got into talking about Arsenal a bit, and then we'll obviously move on to not the more interesting things, but what you're doing right now, which is definitely fascinating.
Yeah, sure. Well, as you mentioned, a lot of people kind of dabble and chance their arm in kind of podcast creation or writing. I mean, yeah, I've been as big an Arsenal fan as I for as long as I can remember, basically. So it sort of felt natural to kind of try and basically, as you've done, turn your passion into something work related. So I think during my time at university, I was involved in like the sports radio shows. So I'd do like a weekly kind of roundup, all things football. And obviously I'd make sure that Arsenal featured quite prominently on there. And then that kind of evolved into a separate radio show, which was not football related, but then quite quickly became football related. And I started a podcast called That Sums It All Up, obviously from the famous Tony Adams moment, and sort of did it for a good few years. I remember messaging you, which you very kindly responded and gave me some advice just about how to kind of try and make the podcast work. So it was basically me and a good friend of mine, who's also a big Arscast, Arsblog reader, listener, everything.
Give him a shout. We've got to give his name a shout out.
Yeah, of course, Johnny. He's a regular listener. He always sends questions and all sorts for your waffle podcast. And anyway, yeah. So where was I? Yeah. So we basically started a podcast, and it would either be me and him or me talking to football fans kind of in my social circle, whether it's predominantly Arsenal fans, but mainly fans from other clubs. And we kind of just would talk about basically whatever was going on in the footballing world, try and give a bit more sort of in-depth analysis, you know, talk about it from a young fan perspective, because mm-hmm. I think that's quite important. I mean, I think I mentioned to you, so there's a group of about 15 of us from my old school, and it's called Arsenal Talk. And it's just, you know, sure. all of us talking about Arsenal all the time. So yeah, we were kind of just podcasting, and then I did a bit of writing and stuff like that. And that's the kind of background in the Arsenal media world.
Sure.
And then it kind of took a turn in a different way. But I think it's, I mean, I've been obviously a big Arsblog, Arscast lover and listener for, I mean, the best part of like 8 years now, maybe even a bit longer. There isn't a place or a moment that I haven't been listening to an Arscast, whether it's in the shower or before I go to sleep. Yeah.
Saucy.
I was thinking about it, going to sleep. Honestly, you guys have been there through thick and thin. So, yeah, I guess you probably... Yeah, this is kind of like, this is great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you're 24. Is that right? Mm. So, yeah, we were talking a bit yesterday, and we might come back to Arsenal a little bit towards the end of the show, you know, about so 20 years since the fact that we won the title. So you would have been four, maybe, yeah. you know, thereabouts. I'm sure you have vivid memories of the trophy being lifted and all the rest of it. But, you know, it is interesting. I think it's fascinating, you know, the online content creation, if you want to call it that what's always been amazing about it is that you can do it from your own perspective, whether it's a younger fan, an older fan, a more experienced fan, whatever your niche might be, and there's somebody out there who's going to be interested in what you're doing. Like the idea that there's a sort of one size fits all thing that you should do, whether you're making content about football or food or fashion or whatever your own passion is, I think is wrong. That you can have your view and your way of doing things, and it might resonate with 50 people, it might resonate with 50,000 people, it might end up resonating with millions of people, you know, as we'll come to with you. But I think it's great, you know, that there is that there, and people have, you know, a choice about what they look at, what they follow, what they listen to, and all the rest.
Absolutely. I think also, you know, as I'm sure you'll know as well, social media is a wonderful platform place, but it also is a terrible place mm-hmm. a lot of the time. And I think it's wonderful in the sense that it gives people like you and in a different way, people like me to kind of do the things that we do. And it's sort of like a, you know, a blank canvas. And if you follow your passion, you can kind of just go with the flow and see what works and see what doesn't, and hopefully make something of it. But I think, it's great that people now can sort of, I mean, if they can, and if it's possible for, you know, life circumstances and stuff like that, sort of take a passion, try and turn it into work, use social media for the power of good, almost to sort of share your views, your perspectives and stuff like that. And I mean, that's kind of what I was doing a bit throughout my time at uni. And, you know, I thought maybe if football and food are my two big passions in life. So sure. I thought, well, if it's not one, it's going to be the other. And ideally it will be both. But it's also great to be able to, and I'm sure you probably empathize with this a lot, is the fact that when your passions turn into your work, it's how to kind of balance that, because you want to be able to, you know, enjoy,
sure.
but also it's your work, and that's kind of how you've got into it. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you balance it a lot better than a lot of people.
Well, I don't know. It's just so part and parcel of what I do, so ingrained in my routine. You know, the line between enjoying Arsenal and work Arsenal. You know, I feel genuinely very lucky to be able to do what I do, and to be able to talk to people and just share, you know, whatever's going on with Arsenal, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, people are there, and it helps you through the good or through the bad times. And hopefully when the good times come along, and they'll come along very soon, I hope, you know, fingers crossed, you know, that's something that we can all enjoy together. And that sort of community idea of that sort of collective enjoyment is something we can all get behind. But you mentioned food as your other passion, football as a passion I think everyone can connect with. What about food? At what point in your life did you start to get like interested in food beyond the fact that, you know, you've got to eat three times a day to stay alive?
Yeah, so I mean, again, it's kind of like football in a sense. It's always been a big part of my, I guess you say, my identity or what I am known for, what I love. Always had a massive appetite growing up. I ate very well growing up as a kid. So my dad's a very good cook, sort of would introduce different sorts of things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily be eating when you're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And then just realized, I think it was maybe when I was like 16. So just finishing school, moving into university, I just had all these photos of like food over the last like 3 years, sort of clogging up my camera roll. So I thought, okay, well, maybe it would be a good idea to start like a WordPress or like a blog. So I kind of started a blog just basically with all the photos of the food, would write little captions, descriptions.
This is food you cooked yourself?
Just food that I'd been made or out and about. And then that kind of transitioned into when I started cooking for myself at uni. I was like, okay, well, I love cooking. I can, it was all about kind of finding sort of vegetables and sort of things in the reduced section that no one wanted. And I'd be like, okay, well, this is really cheap. I'm a student. I can maybe try and turn it into something that is quite exciting. And my girlfriend will testify that it was not very exciting at that time, because obviously I was starting out, but it kind of started from there. So I had and then I turned it into an Instagram blog, which was called It's Just My Munch, which was not Alpha Cooks, which I thought was a great name, but have since found out that maybe it wasn't the most rememberable. But hey, you got to start somewhere.
Well, that's it. I mean, your first idea is not always the best. Like the first tagline for Arsenal for Arsblog was Arsblog, the inconsequential ramblings of an Arsenal fan. And of course, that changed when we won the FA Cup and Freddie Ljungberg scored that goal and said live on TV, it's fucking excellent. It just works a lot better, you know? But, you know, you've got to be able to evolve.
Exactly. You've got to evolve. And so, yeah, that kind of that food blog on Instagram was mainly for friends and family, just things that I'd make, writing kind of what I thought were quite witty and interesting captions. Again, then realizing that they were like two chunky paragraphs on Instagram that no one's going to read. Mm. Again, my girlfriend at one point, she was like, do you actually, like in a nice way, she was like, look, I like them, but do you think anyone's actually reading them? And I was like, I don't know, actually. Anyway, then sort of that kind of transitioned into giving video content a go, recipe video content. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess that's kind of the how my sort of passion for food and what I'm doing now kind of sprung about.
I mean, lots of us and lots of people listening to this will have an Instagram where they post pictures of food, and you know, I certainly do it, and I love cooking, I love food, but I'm not really gonna do the whole recipes thing. Loads of people have Instagram food pictures and everything else.
Yeah.
You, as it stands, I'm just going to check right here now, currently have 3.9 million followers on Instagram, which is insane, right? I think I've got like 50 or 60,000 on Instagram. You've got 3.9. Yeah, well, just about. You've got about, you know, 100 Emirates or whatever. But at what point did you notice something was happening? Like, was it deliberate? Was it strategy? Was it a case that you just started doing stuff and, oh, all of a sudden it's connected with people and now this is sort of snowballing a little bit?
Exactly. Yeah, it's very much that. I mean, I look back and it's funny, as you were talking about before, it's about evolving and practicing and seeing what works, kind of going with it. And I guess following your passion, I mean, it was after I graduated. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And so I had a few hundred followers on across social media. So I was like, right, I love food. I've had a bit of podcasting media experience in the footballing world. So why not try and transition that, use the skills that I've maybe developed put them into kind of the food side of things. So yeah, I was just kind of giving it a go. Like, I mean, I was living in the countryside at the time, you know, had a tiny little tripod and was just trying to film recipe videos that I was doing at the time. And I think it didn't kind of take off initially. It was quite slow. And I was like, okay, well, maybe this can't be a career in its own sense. But then, yeah, there was a moment that kind of changed that. And it was kind of, as we were talking about before, when I started cooking for myself at uni, it was like using the vegetables at the bottom of the fridge, the things that people would throw away, to turn them into something great. Mm. And there was an old beetroot at the bottom of the fridge, I didn't like beetroot. I thought I never really liked it. And I was always a bit scared of it. It's very earthy. And, you know, some people think it tastes like soil, which, you know, I'm not going to disagree with. And I was like, right, well, I'm going to make like a beetroot hummus. So like a nice pink kind of like dip. And then it kind of went from there. And I was just like, okay, well, I filmed this. It looks very pink and great. And then I put a little voice over it. Mm-hmm. To kind of give it a bit more value, and it just went a bit mental, kind of like viral wise. The algorithm clearly picked it up, liked it, and since then, I guess I was like, right, well, this can be something that works. You know, filming content, putting together like promotional videos, in a sense, like a trailer for a series, mm-hmm. So you're kind of putting like the best bits together. And yeah, I've sort of kept going with that. And I guess, as you said before, you're learning, something goes well, you try and develop it and give it another go and apply it to different things. So yeah, that was the moment. That was just over a year ago that, the pinkest hummus was,
wow.
was doing the rounds on social media. Have you tried beetroot hummus before?
No, I haven't. I'm sort of, you know, with beetroot, I'm like, I don't mind it, but it's messy to work with, and I don't want to get pink fingers and all the rest, but it is mad, isn't it, to think that you can be doing something and all of a sudden pink hummus changes the trajectory of your life and you end up, you know, where you are now, and who knows what, you know, where you'll go in the future with all this, you know, with all these followers across the various social media platforms. I guess the thing that we should mention, of course, is that what you're doing is vegan and plant-based. Is plant-based a sort of less pejorative way to say vegan? Because it's kind of had these connotations, hasn't it? Oh, you're a vegan. You know, and look, yeah. I'm a meat eater. I love meat dishes and all the rest. I'm obviously open to all kinds of food, and I will eat all kinds of food. So I'm not being in any way critical or anything like that. But you know, it is a sort of rebrand of that, because I think the word vegan has associations with a certain type of person who would be like, oh God, you know, one of those. Why first and foremost, or at what point did you become vegan? And were you surprised, I suppose, that I'm not going to say it's niche, because it's not niche anymore or anything like that, but you know, people love a fucking video of a burger, or they love a smash, you know, look at this crunchy chicken, whatever it might be. Mm. They tend to be the things that dominate the food virals and all that kind of stuff. Were you Absolutely. Surprised that there was such a, no pun intended, an appetite for what you were doing?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point that you make there, because So I'm not actually 100% vegan. Okay. All the food that I cook is plant-based. And as you say, I like the word, or the way to describe it, as plant-based more than vegan, just because it suits what I am a bit better. Mm-hmm. My diet is based around plants. There will be occasions when I'm out and about, or I'm on holiday, and I will, you know, have a bit of dairy or potentially some seafood, depending on the quality and the freshness. Never any meat, but that's just that's sort of a personal choice that's been in place for like the last 4 or 5 years. But yeah, I think vegan No, it's great. I think it shouldn't have that. It shouldn't ideally, in an ideal world, it should not have that kind of like negative connotation.
Sure.
But I think it does, and I think it puts people off of the food, of the people making the food, which is a shame. So yeah, I like to think of myself as plant based, and yeah, I think there is obviously an appetite for good food, and I'm not necessarily someone who, and there are people who do it and they do it really well. And they say, look, this is vegan. This is why you should be vegan. And there are definitely some benefits and, you know, things to think about in that sense. But I don't tell my audience necessarily like, this is vegan. This is why you should make it. It's more like, this is something I've made. It looks really cool. It's colorful. It's, you know, intending to mimic the certain textures and flavors of meat. Oh yes, and it just so happens to be plant-based. So it's less in your face and more like, well, this is stuff for everyone, whether you eat meat or not. And I think that maybe has appealed to people, because I think it's more like, okay, well, you can make this and you can have something else with it, or you can, you know, whatever you want. I'm not telling people this is what you should do.
Sure.
I'm just showing people this is what you can do. And yeah, I think people are open to sort of new and fun ways of eating, you know, your standard cauliflowers or your mushrooms and how to do some fun things with them in the way that you were saying. You know, I don't create content just to go viral. It's more like things that I want to be cooking and enjoying. But in that sense, there are ways that you can, you know, tap into, well, if people like seeing a crispy chicken burger or like fried chicken, it's like, cool, can I use a mushroom for that?
Yeah. I mean, I really think this is an interesting area, because you see quite often with, like, I know it's not true across the board, but you mentioned cauliflower. How many times have I gone somewhere and seen cauliflower steak? And it's like, it's not steak, but what you're trying to do obviously is sell or convince somebody of that option who might ordinarily, let's say, eat a steak. And I don't know if it's to sort of bridge the gap between people who have stopped eating meat, but who still kind of like meat, but who have, you know, decided against that for ethical reasons or their own personal choice. And you're selling them something that sort of, oh yeah, I'm in that ballpark. Because I don't think anyone who's going out for a steak is going to go, well, actually, I think I'll try the cauliflower today. Doesn't really taste like steak. This is a con.
Medium rare, please.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I do think there is that sort of interesting crossover between, you know, trying to find ways to bridge the gap between, I don't want to say the two worlds, but, you know, the sort of carnivore and the vegetarian / plant-based diet.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, and this is where sometimes the comment sections in certain videos get quite fun, because you get a lot of people, as you say, kind of being like this. So for example, I did a cauliflower steak recipe video a few weeks ago. It was delicious, and I'm fully aware it's not a steak, but, you know, there is, in like the world of cooking, you know, like a steak, it's not just like a beef steak, it's kind of like the cut, the shape. And so, like, technically speaking, you can have like a vegetable that is prepared as a steak. It's almost like a, not a measurement, but like, you know, the cut is like the cross section. So I found a definition on like the Cambridge Dictionary website, and I was just like, every time people were like, this is not a steak, I was just like, nope, sorry, this dictionary tells you that it is. But the point is that, as you say, you're basically trying to present, and look, the cauliflower can be great if you call it grilled cauliflower, but of course there's part of me that wants to kind of challenge people's like conception of like, well, this can't be a steak. And I'm like, I know it's not a steak, but this is, it's a thing. Like cauliflower steak is a thing. And so yeah, it's great to kind of play around with that, and also show people that, as you say, even if you eat meat, this is obviously not like gonna replace what you're eating, but it's an option. And if you had a cauliflower, and I'm definitely someone who, you know, over the last few months has struggled with like, if I see a cauliflower or like any vegetable, you're like, what? Like, what am I going to do with this? Like, it's not always the most inspiring sight to see a big cauliflower, but there are certain things that you can do, certain ways of cooking it, flavoring it, serving it with certain things that can make it really exciting. And I just think, like, if you can show people that it's possible, and then obviously provide a bit of explanation as to why you're cooking it how you are, serving it with what you're serving it with, then it kind of, hopefully some people remake it, some people will hate it, some people will get angry about it. But in terms of social media, as long as you can kind of manage that, and you know, I find like comments in the comment section, like kind of abusing the cauliflower steak, I find it hilarious. I mean,
of all the things that you could get angry about, look, here's a lovely thing that I have made to eat that I like, you might enjoy. You know, the idea that someone's going to get absolutely furious about a recipe is just, you know, I get it. You know, if someone fucks around with a traditional recipe, like, you know, Jamie Oliver does paella and puts all kinds of stuff in it, I can understand how traditionalists might be a little bit upset about that kind of thing. But I think it's just the nature of social media that people always want to be angry and outraged about something, particularly if it's at odds with, you know, their own worldview or their view of what food should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, I'm not completely innocent in that regard. Of course, my work, you're recreating dishes, so sometimes I'll make things like what I call or know as a ramen, so you know, a traditionally Japanese noodle soup, but it's obviously not traditional because that's just that, I don't know, it's my creative cooking, and I don't mean to sort of cause offense or sort of
you're not co-opting, you know, cultural appropriation of
traditional dishes. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there is a space for sort of creative cooking, and what I do is like, okay, I'll have an idea of a dish and then I'll put in whatever's there. But yeah, I think it is clearly there's an appetite for it, as you say, there's a space for creative plant-based cooking that isn't kind of like, this is vegan, it's in your face. I mean, some people do it and it's great, but it's kind of what I've stumbled across. And I think it works quite well in terms of how it suits me, and it's kind of how I live and eat. And clearly it's kind of resonating with people around the world, which is great.
Do you think, you know, that being somebody who is, you know, cooking things that are plant-based, does it make you a little more creative in some ways? Because I think, look, there are obviously people out there doing amazing things with all kinds of food, with meat and fish and vegetables, and you know, the level of creativity and technical ability in kitchens that you see from amateurs on Instagram to actual, you know, top class restaurants is really amazing. But I think, you know, for your day to day person who's cooking meals, I'm not saying fish and meat are kind of fallback devices, but if you've got like, you know, a steak or chicken or fish and chips and, you know, but if you're trying to make something without those sort of key ingredients, like most meals, if you're sort of, you know, a meat eater or a fish eater or whatever, it's meat and something, it's fish and something, it's, you know, fish something, it's beef something, it's pork this, chicken that. But without those ingredients, are you forced to become a little more creative in terms of how you, you know, how you substitute the flavors? Because I think that's a key part of this, is that, you know, those things, whether you eat them or you don't eat them, have flavor and specific flavor that, you know, is easy to identify and to pair with other ingredients because we've all been doing it for so long. So when you're cooking something that's plant-based, is it more of a challenge to come up with things that work together or substitutes, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. And I think that in itself is why a lot of people are kind of unfamiliar with or feel a bit apprehensive about the idea of having a vegan dish or a vegetarian dish. It's like, well, where's the flavor coming from? Where's this coming from? And I get it, because I think animal products, dairy, meat, fish, whatever it is, have that distinct flavor that kind of almost dominates the flavor of the dish. So you're using like the fat, the, you know, you can, whatever it is, and it sits, and then it's like, well, what goes on the side? And I think, going back to what you said initially, I think going plant-based or cooking, you know, at home plant-based has made me so creative in the kitchen, because I think, one, it sort of very much ties into one's like cooking identity of sort of using up what you've got at home. And it's kind of, it's always a bit of a creation. Obviously you've got an idea in your head, but you're like, okay, well, I don't have the piece of meat or the dairy necessarily. And look, there are meat replacements, dairy replacements, and they have their place. Some of them are great, some of them not so great. And but you want to be relying on sort of, you know, whole food like sort of ingredients, so minimal processing. And I think, yeah, when you don't have that kind of flavor and stuff to rely on, I think you do have to be more creative. You have to think about, well, how am I going to cook this vegetable? Am I going to sear it? Am I going to roast it? Get the caramelized like flavors coming through, like which seasonings am I going to make a marinade? So I guess it, you take it a tiny bit further, but actually it's, and I know some people don't have the time or the sort of headspace because everyone's got very busy lives to kind of think too much about how they're going to season like a mushroom, for example. But it is like, once you do it and I do it, I've definitely found that stopping eating meat and dairy has made me more able to kind of explore different flavor combinations, ways of cooking. I mean, at the moment, just case in point, like I'm growing my own mushrooms at home at the moment, edible ones, and and not of the you know, the other variety,
the magical kind.
Yes, exactly. But you know, they are naturally in texture so meaty, and like, you know, they got that like umami flavor, and yeah, you can kind of get so creative with those, like the way that you cook them, the way that you season them, and yeah, I just think, yeah, not eating animal products has definitely made me more creative in the kitchen, because I think, as you say, you have to almost compensate and sort of step outside the box to bring those flavors, those textures together. And it's doable. Yeah. It is doable.
Are there things that you have had to learn to like or learn to enjoy? Because you're talking, you know, mushrooms there. And look, I get it. I'm just not really a mushroom guy. Like,
no.
Honestly, you know, they just don't really work for me, you know?
Fair enough.
Your classic sort of button mushrooms at breakfast, ugh, you know, no. Not good. And I realize there's a whole world of mushrooms and fungus out there that I'm not part of. But like when you decided to give up meat, were there things that, like cauliflower, for example? I just really don't like cauliflower. I like a lot of vegetables. I like most vegetables. There's just something about cauliflower that I don't know if it's a texture thing, if it's something in my brain. Mm. But, you know, did you have to go through a process with certain ingredients to be able to like them and consume them on a regular basis?
I think that's excuse me. I think that's very interesting. I think naturally, so a few years ago, like plant-based or vegan alternatives to meat were sort of at the height of their, like, you know, success. I think there were loads of different countries, companies and different products and all this sort of stuff. And I think for someone who was just starting out as a vegan, vegetarian, whatever, those were great because it almost made the transition a bit easier. Yeah, so plant-based alternatives, transitioning away from animal products. And I think, you know, I stopped eating meat because, I mean, first of all, it was a New Year's resolution. I thought, why not give it a try? I was thought I'd do it at some point. And then once you sort of stopped eating meat for a while, it kind of, for me, just, it felt unnatural to go back to it. So then I was like, I think, as you say, how to get used to not having meat was actually using and exploring some of the alternatives out there to then supplement the things that I would be eating, you know, with what I was eating before. So yes, definitely there are different ways to kind of fill that gap. But I'd say now, having not eaten meat for like 3-4 years, I think it is a process of learning to enjoy vegetables as something that can be the centerpiece, mm-hmm, of a dish. And it is really interesting hearing you talk about mushrooms, because my sister, you know, she loves food. She can't do mushrooms. And every time I see her, every time I cook for her and I'm cooking mushrooms, I not force her, but I'm like, please try one of these mushrooms. And it's not the kind of slimy,
sure,
sluggy sort of texture that you can get with mushrooms. It's if you cook them properly, you get a nice crisp on the outside. If you're using like oyster mushrooms or like king oyster mushrooms and you cook them in a certain way, season them in a certain way, they have an uncanny like resemblance of, you know, chicken or something meaty. And it's crazy the sorts of things that you can do with them. So, you know, maybe one day, I'm not sure how we'd organize it, but I've made a few mushroom dishes on my page, you know, and again, these are ones that really set people going. It's like a mushroom kind of doner where you kind of stack the mushrooms up and cut it like a,
oh my God, like
in kebab shops. Delicious. So good. And I'm growing one at the moment called a lion's mane mushroom, which actually look quite terrifying. They almost look quite cauliflowerish, so I'm not sure. That sounds like your idea of hell.
Yeah. Mushroom cauliflower, no!
But it's interesting that mushrooms and cauliflower are like the kind of, I think because they have so much like potential to flavor, to season, to take on these textures and flavors, they're predominantly used as kind of veggie centerpieces. Yeah. And
you know what it is though? It could be just sort of the way or the era in which I grew up in
perhaps
the way certain foods were presented to you the first time you had them, like fucking
absolutely
boiled cauliflower.
Oh with god, a, and that's like, how I remember cauliflower. Yeah. When I was growing up, like boiled cauliflower
with white sauce on top. Yeah,
mushrooms on a fry up plate that are like slimy and uncooked, and it's just like, that's not what you want to be eating. That's not they have their place for some people, but
maybe I need to be a bit more adventurous and try one of your mushroom recipes and see how it goes.
Well, look, Andrew, if we ever have the chance, and I don't know how it would work, but look, I will one day hopefully cook a piece of cauliflower or mushroom for you, and we'll see how it goes.
All right.
I think you like your food, and that's the thing. I think if you like your food, you like cooking, it's something that you can really get behind, but you just need to, you cook very well, I'm sure. And I've seen some of your photos, but it's an opportunity for people like me who don't eat meat, and you sort of meet and talk to people who do, and maybe haven't experienced these sort of things. And I'm just like, great, well, let's try and give it a go.
Well, let's, you know, try new things. I'm always open to trying new things. So, you know, let's give that a bash at some point. For anyone listening, you know, who, I think maybe one of the biggest challenges for people and sort of your regular person who's out working 9 to 5 every day and has got to come home and collect the kids and make the dinner or whatever it might be is like convenience versus, you know, taste. And look, it's difficult to convince kids to eat things at the best of times, right? So I'm not saying solve that problem for mankind, because I don't think anybody can. But like, if somebody's minded to try something new, to maybe explore, not every day of the week, but you know, once a week or occasionally, a plant-based or a vegan recipe, what would be your sort of go-to recommendation for something that's, you know, relatively quick, relatively easy, relatively uncomplicated in terms of finding the ingredients? Because I do think sometimes they can look a bit, you've got to go to the specialist shop to get the specialist fucking chestnuts to do with the fucking, what, you know, you know what I mean? Your regular person can go to the regular supermarket and knock up something. Like, you've done an amazing, on your Instagram, there's an amazing collection of soups. I noticed there's a pasta series to come as well. So that's obviously something that would, you know, even something like a sauce to go with pasta, it is something that most people can do. So, you know, give me something that you would recommend for people to try based on your experience and something that most people could get behind.
Absolutely. Well, I think the key is to start by thinking like, what do I like to eat? What do my normal midweek meals kind of comprise of? If it's a one night a week, they have a pasta. It's like, okay, well, if you're using shop-bought sauce, that's fine. You know, they definitely have their places, but it's like, how can I add little things to it? So if you're making like your pasta and pesto for your kids, if you're making pesto from scratch, could you, you know, just leave out the cheese? And I know pesto is very, you know, traditionally it's made with cheese, but there are ways around it that, you know, it just require you to not put in the cheese. It doesn't make that of a difference. And just try it. If you don't like it, you know, don't do it again. But I think, you know, for example, so one of the things that I've found, and I guess in a way it's kind of, I'm learning as I'm going in terms of cooking plant-based and creating content. And I'm thinking, well, what do people want to see? How am I going to get people to be inspired to cook the things that I am that aren't too complicated, that use simple, accessible ingredients that you can buy at the supermarket? Mm-hmm. Because look, I don't go to the specialist shops. I try and buy all my stuff from, you know, as cheap as possible from, yeah, from the supermarkets or the local markets, ideally. But for example, let's talk about soup. So I think, you know, everyone tends to like soup. And mm-hmm. it's something that is very sort of veg centric a lot of the time. And you can kind of use the vegetables as the centerpiece. And so let's take, sorry, what was your original question?
It was about a recipe, for example. It was a recipe that, you know, your average person could just put together midweek with relative, without much fuss.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take it to the pastas then. So I'm doing a series of pastas at the moment. And, I think pasta is something that we all eat probably at least once a week. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to make your own sauce is very simple. And I think people sometimes think, oh, it's going to take too long, when actually all you need, as I'm sure a lot of people know, is just, you know, get some garlic in there, some onions, very accessible, very cheap, tin tomatoes, season it well. And then you've got like a lovely homemade tomato sauce, which you could use on pastas. You could then, you know, whatever you want, it's there. You could use it in sandwiches. You could use it in as a base for other dishes as well. And look, that's a very basic recommendation, yeah, of a tomato sauce. But I think it's just those small things of, okay, what do I do now, and how can I just slightly tweak it so that it's very similar to what I like, but just giving it a go without, say, your meat.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. You know, like a bolognese, but I mean, you know, just pasta and sauce is, you know, a classic plant-based, yeah, dish, or, you know, non-meat dish that people can get behind very easily, you know?
And I think another good one as well, just because obviously a bit of pasta and then soup. So obviously I did like a soup series, and I think, as I said, everyone loves a bowl of soup. And I think, again, it's quite easy to do. I mean, simply pick your vegetables, choose which vegetables you like.
just get out onto your farm and pick all the vegetables, yeah, that you want, bring them back, exactly, in your wheelbarrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, that would be ideal, but it's, you know, unfortunately that's not the way the world works. But yeah, you can roast, or if you have an air fryer, I mean, air fryers, I don't know if you have an air fryer.
I do, yeah, yeah.
I was skeptical at first, but they are brilliant. They're so quick, efficient. You can just stick all your vegetables in there, season them however you want. So I tend to go, so this is basically for a whatever you want soup. Mm. And the basis of a soup is, for example, if it's, tomatoes aren't in season. What's in season at the moment? Let's take cauliflower, for example. Not something for you. You know, chop it down, season it with olive oil, salt and pepper, roast it so you get that flavor naturally from it. Mix it with some stock, and then some other things, and you've got like a cauliflower soup. And it's like you could apply that method to any soup, really. Mm. It's roasted vegetables, stock, and then you could serve it with a salad, you could serve it with some bread. And that's just like, you know, you realize when you start cooking like that, okay, so where's, like, I know some people would maybe need or feel the need to have like some meat alongside it, but actually that will do you well, you know, for mm-hmm. a week, feed the family for the night. So yeah, there are so many different ways to do it, and I realize that I haven't given you a really straight answer.
No. I know what you mean. Like, you know, things that, yeah, maybe people don't think of that are already, you know, probably part of what they eat or part of their diet, that you could then tweak and change and modify to your heart's content.
I mean, exactly.
A couple of quick ones just to finish off on this. You've 3.9 million followers on Instagram. I told you I've got 50,000. Sometimes I post like pictures of the dogs and I get all these offers from like, yeah, we want your dog to show off this like product that we have. So you must be inundated with offers and, you know, I hate to use the term influencer and things like that, because, you know, I think that a bit like vegan, there are negative connotations with that, as far as people are aware. But in terms of, you know, what you're doing with this and where you're going to go with this, are you being Are you being choosy about what you do and what you associate yourself with? You know, you're still in the very early days of this, so you've got time on your side and you can grow this into something. I don't quite know what. I don't know if you've got plans or what your idea might be to use this platform to launch a career, because it's an amazing opportunity you have ahead of you. But is that something you're thinking about, and how you continue to grow what you've already grown?
Absolutely. I think, as you say, it's still relatively early days, and I want to not kind of rush things. I want to sort of see what works, kind of slowly take my time thinking about, okay, so what's the next move? Where am I going? Who do I want to work with if I can work with them? What sort of projects do I want to do that sort of align with who I am, mm-hmm. what I like doing, what I think resonates with other people? So, yeah, I think you definitely do need to be sort of selective. I mean, I think people, when they see the number of followers, you're like, oh my God, like you must just be like swamped all the time. And look, there are a certain number of inbound messages or comments or whatever like that. But, you know, it's not actually that tough when it's like my full-time job. I treat it quite seriously to sort of stay on top of it and get back to people, whether it's just people making your dishes or sort of leaving suggestions or feedback or anything like that. And then there's the other side of it, which is like work opportunities, which, you know, I've just started working with sort of my first management agency, who sort of helped me with, I mean, sort of negotiations. And again, it's the kind of thing, you could say it's an agent, but I don't like that phrase, because it's like, I'm not a football player. I'm just like a guy cooking. And you
hey,
know.
Look, everyone has agents, writers, actors, yeah. football players. Yeah. They all have agents. You know, once you're yes. in that sort of public sphere, there is.
I know. But it's great to be working with someone who's kind of aligned with you, you know, and sort of can help you kind of map out, as you say, your steps to what comes next. So, there are lots of ideas that kind of I would love to explore. But as you say, it's still relatively early days. So hopefully at some point there would be a discussion about doing a recipe book, which mm-hmm. would be great, but it's a big piece of work and something that I haven't sort of started thinking about just yet. As I said to you before, and we'll get hopefully maybe into a bit of football discussion, the two true passions in my life are food and football. So to be able to try and combine those two things, because I think, you know, we all love and remember Hector Bellerin and his, you know, he always spoke so well about sort of veganism and the impact on the planet and stuff like that. And I think there's, you know, as unfortunately, as we move on time-wise, there will be more and more sort of implications on the sort of health of our planet and what we're doing and how football, given how bigger, and like, look, I'm not saying it does enough. It probably doesn't do nearly enough to try and offset the kind of sort of consequences that on the climate and the environment. But I think there's going to be a space hopefully emerging that sort of for maybe people like me who are passionate football fans and foodies who can use their platform, use the power of football to kind of reach more people and influence.
I know, I know.
encourage people to, you know, make certain choices, whether it's not eating meat once a week or something like that. But that's another thing that I'd love to do. And as you say, also sort of working with people, with companies or brands or whoever who align with my food sure. style, with my sort of interests. Obviously, Arsenal would be a dream. So let's say, fingers crossed.
So maybe anyone listening, can we get a plant-based food stall inside the Emirates? Vinay?
Yeah, so those sorts of things sure. are kind of at the forefront. I'm going to start doing YouTube because I want to do... There's only so much of yourself you can get across in, like, you know, less than a minute videos on social media when the food is mm-hmm. kind of at the forefront. So, you know, kind of bringing myself into things a bit more, wanting to do maybe, you know, some events or public appearance, whatever it is, you know, I'm open to all sorts sure. of opportunities. And as we've talked about, it's early days. So yeah, that's the kind of plan, if that's a plan in itself.
Yeah, I mean, play it by ear. That's the thing, you know, and as you said, it's not about preaching to people. It's about encouraging people. It's about showing people that, you know, that there are alternatives or different things that you can try. And I think anybody who loves to cook, you reach a point where you go, what the fuck am I going to make today? And then it's like, okay, well, I'll get this idea. Like, I don't know how many times, you know, I've been sort of just foostering around on the internet and you see a recipe, you go on YouTube or you go on Instagram, you see, oh, I'll have a go at that, you know. And I think that's, you know, that's what's really interesting about all this. And, you know, I think it's amazing and congratulations. And I hope it continues along this way for you. It's is one of those things, I think, that when an opportunity presents itself that you're not necessarily thinking of, you have to be open to embracing it and seeing where it takes you. And I also, I have to say, as a voiceover guy, as a voiceover guy, I enjoy the slightly voiceovery. Here is my delicious soup.
Of course.
Yeah, no, you're getting in that. You're getting in that. What is it? AMSR or ASMR?
ASMR.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know, I think that's another part. And look, I think, you know, I'm not gonna fanboy and credit, but you know, I have listened to your podcast and the quality of the audio and the, you know, the impressions you do and the work that you've done. And. And I think because I did my podcast and radio shows and a few people were like, oh, you've got a radio voice, or like, you're quite good at this. And it's a part of the work that I love doing. I love sort of writing scripts and voiceovers, trying to get creative with it. It's about like, how can I, again, add a layer to the work or the content that I'm producing? Mm-hmm. And of course, when I'm in my work zone, when I'm in my flow and I'm watching this recipe video, I'm like, okay. And then maybe you get a bit, you know, you drop a tiny bit deeper. But
check out my delicious nuts.
Exactly. Yes.
Peanuts. Folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
But obviously some people think, oh my God, like, what's this annoying voice? But, you know, it's part of my work and I quite enjoy doing it and it's great. So yeah, that's another thing that I'd love to start exploring is, you know, as we're doing now, getting on podcasts, thinking about other kind of things that I can do, because obviously you don't want to just be on Instagram and you need to want to,
sure,
you know, what if Meta collapses tomorrow, then what the hell happens then?
Yeah. You've got to future proof and make sure that you have your own platforms. And,
absolutely.
You know, I've always said that to people, you know, when they've contacted me and asked for advice about stuff online, is like, try not to be dependent on any one platform, whether you're on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is. You are ultimately beholden to this gigantic tech company that literally does not give a fuck about you or anybody else. And if they pull the plug or go under, you're fucked, you know? So to have your own home, if you like, the way sort of, obviously Arsblog is on all these things, but Arsblog as a website exists, you know, within the control that we have. Finally, we should just talk just a little bit about Arsenal and about, you know, what's coming up and how excited are you for the run in? You know, where is
as
your?
You said that I've got tingles over my body just as you were saying that. Yeah, God, it's well, I won't be watching. Is it England tonight? Or
it's England. I think they're playing. Yeah, gosh. England playing Belgium tonight.
What a bore.
Yes, but you know, the big stuff starts again on Sunday against Manchester City, and it is going to be exciting. And this is does this team, you know, you've obviously got a lot going on and having a lot of success with what you're doing, but does this team and this current team and what's going on right now kind of make you wish you were still doing a bit of Arsenal podcasting? Because it's a lot more fun when we're winning and when the team is good, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. Well, I've spoken to my mate and we did say if touch wood, anything does happen towards the end of the season and it's a good outcome, then we will be revisiting the podcast for a one-off special.
Glory hunters.
We'd have to. Yeah, glory, exactly. Only when it goes well. No, I think, look, obviously my attention has sort of in a working capacity been drawn towards food a bit more, but you know, I am very much on the case with all the, you know, the podcasts, the articles, the games. I don't miss anything. My girlfriend will sort of, unfortunately for her,
she'll testify to that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's obviously a very big, I mean, it's almost as if this break has sort of it's kind of diffused the tension a bit, but then straight away, as soon as it starts, it's going to ramp up. Mm. And I was just looking at the fixture list this morning, and it's very intense. And I mean, to have City away right after an international break is, I guess, not ideal, because I think we've seen, as I know you've mentioned before, certain players sometimes come back from international duty and they take a bit of time to get up to speed. It doesn't sound as if we've got any sort of new injuries that have been picked up during international break. Fingers crossed, touch wood. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm very excited. I'm very nervous, but I think this is where we want to be. This is where we should be, sort of in it at the crunch time, at mm-hmm. crunch time of the season. And I just really hope that we can go to City and give a solid account of ourselves, show that we've grown, show that we've learned from last year. And look, they're a very good side. They've got wonderful players. And so I don't think you can go to City expecting to win. But I think sort of deeper down, all of us Arsenal fans are hoping that we can really, if we give a really good account of ourselves, then who knows what the outcome would be. But that is the most important thing. And then sort of take it from there. But yeah, it's going to be an intense few months. How are you feeling about everything?
Excited and terrified in equal measure, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, as I've said, this is, you know, when you're in eighth, in mid-table, you're bemoaning the direction of the club. This is the direction you want to go in. And with that direction comes, you know, other consequences. You know, rather than anger or indifference, you've got this fear. But the fear turns to absolute joy if you can get over the line and do what you need to do. And I hope we can do that. And I think if we do give a good account of ourselves at Manchester City, if there are no external factors involved in this game, if we can play as well as we can play, we've already shown this season that we're capable of beating them. Doing it at the Etihad, very, very different, of course, but I'm not going to say I'm confident, but I do think it is well within the capabilities of this team, which is not something I would have said even maybe 12 months ago, and certainly not 2 years, 3 years ago. You'd have said that the gap is too big. I don't know how we're going to close that gap. I think we've closed the gap. Whether we can win the game or not, we'll wait and see, but I hope so.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, we are definitely capable of turning up there and putting in a solid performance. And I think City have shown as well that they obviously, and we talk about them in this sense, they have shown that they are or can be vulnerable at certain times. And I know they tend to sort of pick up in the final stretch of the season. And I'd say we're definitely in that now. So let's see how they, you know, they might turn on the turbocharge mode and that'll be that. But I think we're, as you say, well placed to give them a game. And hopefully we can turn up there with, you know, the team in its full strength. I mean, it's strange, isn't it, that this time, it was a bit later last year, but we went to City and, you know, Thomas Partey was playing and Granit Xhaka, but they were both sort of half fit. And I think maybe Odegaard was carrying a little niggle or something.
Yeah, there was
Holding
no,
was playing.
No Saliba, no Tomiyasu.
Exactly. And then we had Zinchenko and Jesus playing and who knows? I mean, I would not be surprised if we go to City and basically none of those four players that I've just mentioned will be starting. And I think people who have stepped up in their injuries, in their absence, have shown that they shouldn't maybe lose their place. So I'll be intrigued to see how we set up on Sunday. And hopefully everyone's fit and well. And I think that's maybe been the issue in recent times. We need to kind of turn up to City with a fully fit squad and everyone kind of on song. And so if we can do that, and as you say, there's no external factors, then I think, look, that's all we can hope for. And then I back Mikel and the players to sort of give it a really good crack. But look, we shall see. I will be I'll be watching in very, very intense anxiety but excitement on Sunday, as I'm sure we all will be. But as you, it's one game, but it's a big one.
It sure is. All right. Well, look, we'll keep fingers crossed for Sunday. Again, I wish you every success with this. It's an amazing thing and an amazing opportunity, and I hope it goes really well for you. Thank you so much for your time today. Great to talk.
That was very kind, Andrew. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, good luck for Sunday. Let's keep our fingers crossed for everyone.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Alfie. What a great story, and great to chat to him. And I have to say, look, as somebody who is a meat eater, some of the recipes on his Instagram page look absolutely amazing. You can find him. He's Instagram.com/AlfieCooks_, and you'll also find links to the Instagram and his other channels in the show notes. Right. Don't forget, we will have an episode of Waffle for you over on Patreon tomorrow, Wednesday, the podcast in which James and I talk about anything and everything except for Arsenal. If you want to sign up there, you can do that, patreon.com/arsblog. For now, take it easy, eat well, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers, bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.